Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. We are going to be exploring some very important parts of what I think of as the battle space of the war for the free world. We'll be jumping into it straight away in our weekly wrap-up session with Fred Grandy, my colleague at the Center for Security Policy, our executive vice president there, former member of Congress, former star of stage and screen, as a matter of fact.
A long time ago.
A multimedia personality. Anyway, we're here talking with him about what's been going on in the war for the free world, and there have been some important developments, most notably, sort of in the breaking news category as we speak. A very important hero of that war is been now vindicated by a court in his native Denmark.
There is a small but significant victory on the battlefield this morning, and we can literally say this just in, because Lars Hedegaard, the Danish journalist who was essentially prosecuted and originally found guilty of hate speech in Denmark because of some offhand comments about Islam he made at a Christmas party in his own home, has just been fully acquitted by the Danish Supreme Court, who found no evidence of hate speech or racism or the usual charges that are brought against these kind of people in Europe. Now, the reason this is significant, Frank, is because not only did the court acquit Hedegaard and say you are a free man, but they also apparently left on the table whether or not the provision in Danish law, this article that has created these kind of hate speech crimes, is worth looking at from the Danish Parliament's point of view. Maybe these things don't deserve to have the force of law. Now, that's terribly significant for some of the other people that are under the gun. Geert Wilders in the Netherlands, Elisabeth Sabadich Wolf, who is in Austria and fighting the same battles. So it is
Let's just clarify what that battle is. These are people who have said things that happen to be true.
They are absolutely true.
But happen to also be offensive in the eyes, particularly of easily offended Islamists. Mm-hmm. And it is the Islamists who have brought them up effectively on charges through these various government agencies and mechanisms, and have had the effect, at the very minimum, of putting these people in jeopardy of fines or some other kind of punishment. And so what you've said, Fred Grandy, is the Danes, at least, who, by the way, folks, are confronting this rising tide of Sharia in their country big time.
Absolutely.
At the moment, are now beginning to sense that maybe punishing people for speaking the truth, for expressing themselves freely in their countries, their Western democratic countries, is not a crime after all.
Absolutely not. And let's keep in mind that a lot of the Sturm und Drang about Islamophobia began in Denmark with the cartoons in Jyllands Postal newspaper. So there is a kind of circle that is forming here, and hopefully it will continue to emanate out across Europe. We don't know that yet, but it is encouraging that Denmark, a country that a lot of us felt had pretty much been lost to the other side in terms of Islamophobia, is now reclaiming some key territory.
Yeah. Heartening news. A ruling in Egypt may be similarly tectonic, not necessarily in a positive direction, though, Fred Grandy. Tell us what's happened there with respect to this business about who can run for president in the upcoming presidential elections in that country.
Well, as you know, the Muslim Brotherhood, after they said they would not, mounted a candidate, this guy Khairat el-Shatter.
You mean they lied?
It looks as though
they didn't tell the truth?
They
the
skimmed,
Muslim Brotherhood?
They
Fred,
skimmed something off the top of
shocked.
The truth. Yeah, I know.
One of a series of steps, by the way, where they said they would do something and they didn't do something.
You sounded like Claude Rains in Casablanca for a minute. But really what went on here is the Electoral Commission, whoever runs that, has thrown el-Shatter off the ballot, has thrown the Salafist candidate, Hazem Ismail, off the ballot, and has thrown Omar Suleiman, who is a big player, the former chief of intelligence, off the ballot as
and
well.
Former vice president, I think.
Yes, he was the vice president briefly under Mubarak. But it remains to be seen whether or not the Brotherhood will field a candidate. The real question, though, is what will the streets say? Will they say, good, the military will retain power, or will they say, no, this is justice denied? The jury is still out on this. But
I guess the jury is actually still out on whether these folks will, in fact, be held ineligible under this ballot.
There will be a Muslim Brotherhood candidate.
I don't think that's in doubt.
No.
They've already slotted somebody in the case that this fellow, who, by the way, is the deputy guide, they call him, El Shatter, of the movement, the Islamist movement known as the Muslim Brotherhood. He happens also to be a rich businessman. So this guy is going to be a player in that group and in that, now dominant faction within the government, whether he's in the presidency or not.
And based on his own public statements, he's unequivocal about his belief in establishing the worldwide caliph. Let's not have any illusions about what this guy's agenda is.
But or what the Brotherhood's agenda is.
Absolutely. And, of course, they control 75% of the parliament right now and completely dominate the constitutional process. So I don't put this in the same category with the battle that we won in Denmark.
Oh, no. Well, I don't mean that it's of a kind. Yeah. I meant that simply it may be equally momentous in its way, and we'll be following it closely, Fred Grandy, with you and our guests here at Secure Freedom Radio. Islamists are on the march elsewhere around the world, needless to say, and no story on this subject would be complete without looking at what's going on in Sudan. We've had interviews in the earlier programs here this week about what is developing there, but there's been a major new upshot in this sort of long, festering, horrifically genocidal program out of Khartoum. What's the latest there?
It's interesting, Frank, because one of the real career bad guys in the whole Islamist cabal is Omar Bashir, the military ruler of Sudan. And, of course, as you know, South Sudan broke away a couple of years ago, but there is a disputed territory.
I think it was a couple of months ago now.
Well, yes.
Late last year.
But South Kordofan is still the area that is contested because there happens to be some oil-rich areas down there. And Bashir has now said, we are going to essentially take South Sudan back. We will march right into Juba, which is their new capital. And, of course, we've been dealing with some colleagues who have been in the Nuba Mountains where people are literally living in caves and are being bombed.
And starved to death.
And starved to death without any UN aid, which is not allowed to get to them. So the question I think we have to ask is, if we are concerned about Darfur, and if we are concerned about human suffering at an absolutely apocalyptic level, why aren't we doing anything about these populations in South Sudan?
Yeah. And the prospect that this whole thing is about to ratchet up big time.
Yeah.
And folks, just to put a fine point on what Fred has just said in terms of how bad Bashir is, he's been indicted by the International Criminal Court on war crimes for these various decades-long predations. He's also a guy who was responsible for giving safe haven to Al-Qaeda, and specifically Osama bin Laden, for years before they migrated up to Afghanistan. So, Fred Grandy, this really is a crisis in the making, and I think requires our very close attention. One last thing quickly, in our own hemisphere, we've had a judge from Venezuela manage to get here, apparently in a position to rat out the narco operations that Hugo Chavez and his narco generals are engaged in. Where do you think that's likely to lead, and how soon will we know more about this fellow Eladio Aponte Aponte?
Well, assuming that he has corroborated testimony, it looks as though Venezuela is a state-sponsored drug cartel. What that does, not so much to Chavez, who it looks as though is going to be claimed by cancer fairly soon, but to his successors, it's hard to say. We know that Venezuela is essentially a home away from home for Hezbollah. We know they've been using drug monies to fund these kinds
Hamas,
of terrorist activities.
Iran,
absolutely.
China,
I mean, they
Russia.
Are essentially Cartagena and Caracas are to our hemisphere what Khartoum is to Africa. But it remains to be seen what we will do, because, you know, Frank, this administration has been as obsequious to our Latin American enemies as they have been to our Middle Eastern ones.
Yeah, they're sort of an equal opportunity.
They are.
Obsequious operation. Fred, we have to let it go at that. Thanks for this wrap-up. A little bit of good news.
Some. We'll take what we can get.
Just a little bit. A lot of not-so-happy talk. Next up, Fred goes inside the cloakroom with Congressman Paul Gosar, bright young freshman member of Congress who's trying to ensure that we all understand Israel has the right to defend itself against an existential threat from Iran. Straight ahead.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
My name is Sunday Hollis, and I totally lost the cravings for sweets. I totally lost the cravings for bread, even meat. And some people, you know, you would see people say, well, you're eating a salad because you're trying to diet, but you just don't have a taste for any of the junk anymore. And it is so, so, so true. I'm thinking this is something that the celebrities are using. They're just not giving the meta system the credit for it. I've tried everything under the sun, and this is the only product that I have even called the company and asked them, could I sell it for them? This is a product where you can actually use the word awesome. I mean, and it is the whole essence of the word awesome.
Don't wait another minute to start losing weight. Call Judy Singer's The Meta System at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
We could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Fred Grandy in the cloakroom, and we're pleased to welcome Congressman Paul Gosar of Arizona, a freshman member who serves on the Natural Resources Committee and on the Committee of Oversight and Government Reform. He joins us from Arizona. Congressman, thanks for being with us.
Fred, thank you so very much, and thanks for all you do.
Well, I want to talk about something that you're doing, because even though you are not actually sitting on a lot of the committees of jurisdiction that deal with foreign policy or the armed services, I know you've taken a very keen interest in U.S. foreign policy right now, and to that end have created a resolution that you're going to be introducing next week. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely, Fred. What we want to make sure is our unwavering support of Israel and their right in a precarious situation in the Middle East. We know that the president hasn't been a great supporter. In fact, has really backtracked on current Israeli-American policy, U.S. policy. So what this resolution basically does is it as Congress, will back Israel in anything they need to do preemptively in face of their security, both with Iran and those around.
So actually, what you're essentially saying to Israel, if I'm getting this correctly, is what they always presumed the United States was going to do for them and with them until this particular administration came into power.
Absolutely. We want to make sure that that we speak on behalf of the American people, the People's House, Congress, speaking on behalf to make sure that they know that we are behind them when this president and this administration will not be.
All right. So let's obviously take that to the conclusion that we're all looking at with some dreadful anticipation right now, and that is the situation with Iran. Does this resolution affirm Israel's right to defend itself, even up to taking a preemptive strike against Iran, if the government believes that's the only way they can keep from being attacked themselves?
Absolutely, because, you know, we have never got these issues of nuclear presence right. In fact, we've been behind the eight ball over and over again in historical knowledge. So what we want to do is we want to make sure that we're behind Israel. And it actually explicitly and implicitly says that we support them in any type of preemptive aspects that they may have to do, particularly with Iran.
Now, let me ask you something about your particular constituency. I know you're from Flagstaff, and obviously I'm just curious to know what your Arizona constituents say when you talk to them about this, because this is not an economic issue, at least at this point. This is not supposedly what the new presidential campaign is supposed to be about, not about jobs. But I'm just curious to know what the grassroots response is when you introduce this kind of a resolution.
Well, this isn't our first resolution in support of Israel. You know, we earlier offered an amendment in the budget of last year talking that if you can't acknowledge a peaceful existence for Israel, you get no money. We ought to be empowering and supporting our friends, and Israel has been a friend through and through. And our grassroots, from Native Americans to ranchers to farmers to lay people, and frankly, a very poor district in the United States, I've had standing ovations in regards to that. And that's because that's how strongly my constituents, rural America, feels with its relationships with Israel.
You know, it's interesting because I remember being in your office, I think, last year, talking about money for Egypt and Israel, and you were making the point that you were brand new to Congress. I believe you were trained as a dentist, right? Weren't you essentially a medical professional? And the point that you were making to us when we were in your office is that you did not have time or the temperament to kind of sit and wait and allow slow, sometimes glacial bureaucratic procedures to get in the way. You've now been a member for a little over a year, and I'm just wondering what your frustration level is like when you see, obviously, the best of intentions towards Israel get sidestepped by, for example, the Secretary of State, in defiance of Congress saying, we're going to take the $1.5 billion and give it to Egypt in one lump sum with no strings attached, even though your colleagues specifically said, we don't want you to do that.
It actually shows this, a continuing trend with this administration. You look at the GSA scandal. You look at Secret Service in Colombia with a prostitute. You see Eric Holder defy Congress in giving over information when his higher-up, number three in charge, at least has lied to Congress in regards to covering up with gun running. You show an absolute disdain that this administration shows for the proper adjudication as well as the proper enforcement of what's right and wrong. And I think there's consequences to this. I don't think I know. In our district, they're fuming. And yes, it is a very red district, but they are fuming at this administration. They want the administration to get out of the way. They want the administration to pony up, and they want to make sure that the president is held accountable.
And what about the conversations in Republican cloakrooms? Obviously, this is a resolution introduced by you. You're a junior member of Congress, but do you expect to gain the support of your colleagues and perhaps get this to the floor with a successful vote?
I absolutely do, Fred. You know, I may be a junior member of Congress, but I do know what's right and wrong. And I challenge the members in Congress to hold this president and this administration accountable for a failed policy in the Middle East. And this is outrageous. And America needs to stand up about what's right and wrong.
Well, I'm curious to know that, because as you're talking about this, you obviously are aware that the administration just entertained a delegation from the Muslim Brotherhood from Egypt, and not only allowed them, obviously, the full diplomatic protocols, but actually waived some of the customs provisions that expedited them through the process, even though one of their delegation was suspected on child pornography charges in Pennsylvania. As a former member myself, I'm just wondering what the temperature is among you guys, particularly in the House, where you control the gavels, when you see this kind of high-handedness.
We're upset. And the problem is that unlike you, Fred, bringing this to the American public's attention, Main Street America or media does not bring it to Main Street America. You know, and that's why we have a gap being able to educate the American people, because we need to do these changes legislatively with the American people, not dictated to them. But that's why we need more people like you highlighting what's so important and why so many things are going wrong with this foreign policy of this administration.
Let me ask you, in a couple of minutes that we have left, as you kind of get the lay of the land and position yourself as a player in the Republican majority, what do you see as the future of U.S. Israel and principally U.S. Iranian relations going forward?
Well, first of all, you can never go forward until you reaffirm the friendships and the bonds that you hold with your friends. And that needs to be, you know, emphatically embraced. And that's one of the reasons why we're putting this resolution or this bill forward, is to make sure that Israel understands that we are behind her. Second of all, is it's time that we got tough with people that do not follow the rule of law, that continue to over and over defy proclamations as well as enforcement rules and regs. And it's also time that we had an administration that finally figured out that it's time to hit the door and get somebody else in that understands the ability of an administration to be tough and mean what it says. You know, it's not just Israel that we have to worry about. Look at Mexico.
Sure.
The outcry of over 300 Mexican people who have been killed by guns that this administration put in the hands of drug cartels and criminals is outrageous. Where are the Hispanic votes? Where are the Latino voices? Just like those of Israel. We need to make sure that this administration and the electorate in America actually hears about this so that they make an educated decision and show this administration the door after this election.
You know, you just brought up something I couldn't help observing. There has to be a certain kinship between people in Arizona who have obviously been harassed by the government in terms of their immigration policy with the people of Israel who are being harassed by the government of the United States over their policies to defend themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for bringing that up, Fred, because, you know, I look at how Arizona came into the Union. Mm-hmm. We just are celebrating our 100 years with the United States as a state and our statehood.
That's right.
We came into this statehood kicking and screaming, asking that, you know, one of the key principles was to recall judges, which, you know, the president at the time did not want to happen.
Right.
We are asking and we are crying out to have a government to work with us. We have serious problems in Arizona. We have serious problems across this country. What we don't need is we don't need Big Brother and this administration and its means to be forcing things, suing us. What we need them to do is work with us, embracing, the involvement of Arizona and its people in the solution process. But what's so great about Arizona is they're tired of not having a solution. They're coming to the table, they're pushing the issue, and they've also brought things to the table to say, listen, we will help ourselves. Here's some of our opportunities and our ideas. And that's the same thing that we ought to be with Israel. That's one of the things that you love about Israel's spirit and their stalwartness in regards to their identity and where they need to look at the future.
Congressman Paul Gosar, thanks for being with us on Secure Freedom Radio.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it at www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
In 1966 in Anchorage, Alaska, a talented child was born. He would go on to be one out of only 11 Alaskans to make it to the major leagues. The odds of him striking out more than 3,000 hitters? 1 in 33 million. The odds of this pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fast-balling philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism is getting closer to home. From 1 in 5,000 only 20 years ago, today 1 in 110 children are diagnosed. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
What are you doing?
Filling out a loan application.
I can help you get approved, you know.
Really? How?
With this.
A bag of sand?
It's not a bag, it's a pouch. And it's not sand, it's credit fairy dust.
Credit fairy dust?
Yes, I sprinkle some fairy dust on the application, and your credit rating magically improves.
There's no such thing as the credit fairy.
An unbeliever now. But what will you think when your loan is approved?
I'll think my credit score improved because I paid my bills on time, kept my credit card balances low, and only opened a new card if I really needed it.
It's the dust.
It's sand.
Don't deny the credit fairy.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're joined by Robert Muse, a colleague, a really heroic figure as far as I'm concerned, a Marine by background, now engaged in the war for the free world on the lawfare front. He and his colleague and our friend David Yaroshalmi are now partners in a new and very important initiative called the American Freedom Law Center. And he's reporting in from the U.S. Circuit Court, I believe in Ohio, where he and David have just presented their brief in an appeal of an earlier ruling concerning a very important matter, matter that goes to the very fundamentals of whether there will remain separation of church and state in this country, or should I say mosque and state, perhaps. Robert, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you. Give us a blow-by-blow, if you will, on what happened just now in the Circuit Court of Appeals there.
Right. Well, I argued before a three-judge panel at the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I've got to say it was a very hostile panel. Unfortunately, based on their questioning, I think they're going to probably take what is the easy way out, the procedural way out, which so often happens when you're asking a court to be courageous and do a very difficult but right thing, and that is to find that the bailout of AIG was unconstitutional because because millions, if not billions of dollars are going to support Sharia and Sharia advisory boards and Sharia compliant financing.
Rob, let back the lens up a little bit, because we're assuming people are familiar with this case. AIG needs to be identified, and perhaps just remind us about the nature of the bailout and why you say an insurance company, of all places, would be involved with Sharia.
Right. Well, back in 2008, during the midst of this financial crisis, Congress passed the Emergency Economic Stabilization Act, which gave to the Department of Treasury $700 billion that they could then use to buttress up, bail out, so to speak, various financial institutions. AIG, as you indicate, is an insurance company in New York, but they're also the market leader in Sharia-compliant financing. And pursuant to this Congressional Spending Act, Congress and through the Department of Treasury gave $70 billion of open-ended funds to AIG to not only support its operations, but they also used to buy the stock of AIG. Because actually right now, as of today, the federal government is a 92% shareholder of AIG. And so not only, and AIG is the market leader in Sharia-compliant financial products, which they have their own Sharia advisory board. They describe Sharia itself as Islamic law based on the Quran. I mean, it's plainly they're engaging in a religious activity. So you have federal taxpayer dollars
and Rob,
going.
On that, let me just ask, in discovery, I believe you and David Yerushalmi found that the AIG website, at least at a moment, was promoting Sharia itself, not just their insurance products that conform to it, but Sharia itself. Is that right?
That's exactly right. They were promoting it as a new way of life. Promoting Sharia as you indicate, as a new way of life. I mean, this is beyond just selling a financial product. And again, it's not just the government providing money to a private entity as an arm's length transaction. Through the use of the federal taxpayer dollars, the government actually acquired ownership and control of this company.
Right.
So now you have the sovereign itself engaged in religious activity, which is an excessive entanglement directly in violation of the Establishment Clause.
Yeah.
But in the client, our client plainly has, as a federal taxpayer, has standing to challenge the use of federal funds, particularly congressional spending programs, that are being used to fund religious activities. And unfortunately, based on this court, I think they're going to, as I indicated, I think they're going to take the easy way out and say, well, there isn't standing, meaning that he wasn't harmed sufficiently as a taxpayer to be able to bring this challenge, and so they won't go to the merits of the case. You know, very interesting, the government attorney who was arguing on the other side kept describing it as Sharia. I mean, the government has no clue about the dangers of Sharia, to the point where the attorney who's arguing before the U.S. Court of Appeals, the Sixth Circuit, calls it Sharia.
Yeah.
They have
Tell
no
us,
concept of what this is about.
Well, again, this is not entirely a surprise, given the cluelessness that we've seen on the part of the U.S. government about so much of this. And by the way, Rob Muse, as you know, of the American Freedom Law Center, we at the Center for Security Policy will be rolling out next week a course that is designed to try to make sure that at least the average American can become very knowledgeable about not Sharia, but Sharia, what it involves, who's trying to bring it to this country, and the extent to which this government, well, willful blindness or witlessness, whatever you want to call it, political correctness, is a function of a successful effort, as you know, Rob Muse, a Marine, in information dominance by our enemy. But speaking of Marines, tell us about your plaintiff, your client in this case, and why he should be deemed to have standing.
Right. Well, Kevin Murray, he's a certainly as a federal taxpayer has standing, but even by way of more background, he's a combat Marine. He fought in Iraq. He saw the actual threat of Sharia to our way of life firsthand. I mean, he put his life on the line, and here he is. He comes back to the United States after serving combat tours in Iraq, putting his life on the line, and seeing our federal government giving billions of dollars to promote Sharia. And, you know, as your listeners may not know, but even with Sharia-compliant financing, there's a religious tax component. They call it a zakat, where money that either excess profits or if they invested in something that was not promoting Islam, they peel off those profits, and those profits go to a quote-unquote appropriate Islamic charity, Holy Land Foundation, you name it, charities that we know are hostile to our interests, who are funding terrorist activity. So even not only directly is the government promoting Sharia, but indirectly they're funding and allowing funding to be provided to organizations that are hostile to the United States. I mean, this is absolutely outrageous.
Just to put a fine point on it, under Sharia, as you know, Robert Muse, and I hope our audience does by now, at least an eighth of this so-called zakat, this contribution to charity that a faithful Muslim is supposed to make pursuant to Sharia, has to go to what amounts to jihad, and more perhaps to material support for it. Let me ask you this, Rob Muse. This court that you've just spoken to would apparently, if your instincts are right, rule that your client, Kevin Murray, does not have standing for some reason. I mean, certainly sounds to me as though his interests have been affected, have all of ours. What would be the next step if that were to be their ruling?
Well, if there's a ruling, we can file what's called a petition for rehearing en banc, meaning the circuit court is made up of, and each circuit is different, 20-some-odd judges. And I argued this morning before a three-judge panel. You can then petition to have the case heard before a full panel, which actually ends up being a quorum, approximately 11 judges. And so if we can get that, if that is denied, then the next step is to petition the U.S. Supreme Court to take the case up on review.
But presumably you would much prefer to be arguing this case on the merits rather than on this technical question. Let's just say for the purposes of discussion that they find your client doesn't have standing. Do you have to go back to square one and get some other client, or what happens? I mean, the merits of this case, Robert Muse, as you have with David Yerushalmi developed them and presented them to at first a district court judge and now to these circuit court judges, seem so compelling and so important to be argued as a constitutional matter. What recourse do you have?
Well, and interesting is you mentioned the district court. He found that we did have standing, mm-hmm. and so he actually ruled on the merits. I mean, he followed the law appropriately. This panel, and maybe it'll come out different in the opinion, but based on their questioning, they didn't grasp the concept of standing. If our client doesn't have standing, then the reality is nobody has standing, because what they're saying that the congressional action that we're challenging is not suspect to a federal taxpayer challenge, and that's the only way to challenge it. So essentially what they're saying is Congress is immunized and they can do what they want and they can support the Sharia all they want through AIG, and nobody can complain about it on constitutional grounds. So there'll be nobody that would have standing to challenge this, because their ruling is going to be a broad ruling that there's no federal taxpayer standing, and that's the only basis to challenge a congressional spending program under the Establishment Clause. In fact, the only way you can challenge it is under the Establishment Clause and under these circumstances. So they would essentially be immunizing Congress from any constitutional challenges.
Well, this would be, needless to say, a huge win for those who are trying to insinuate Sharia into this country, the Muslim Brotherhood, the Iranians, other Islamists who seek to destroy us from within, folks. Think about it. If this court rules in a manner that Rob Muse suspects they might and is upheld along the food chain, you can kiss goodbye not only the Establishment Clause of the United States, but I suspect our ability to do as much as we need to resist this predacious, dangerous doctrine of Sharia. Rob Muse, we thank you for tuning in here. We look forward to visiting with you again very soon about this. Needless to say, good luck with your efforts. A lot is on the line, and we strongly support what you and David Yerushalmi and the American Freedom Law Center are up to. Keep it up and keep coming back to us. Next up, we'll be speaking with Bill Gertz about what's going on inside the ring.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy. Eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The MetaSystem from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The MetaSystem also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta system, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta system to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Throughout history, sound science has been rooted in realistic experimentation. Last week, however, the National Academy of Science turned the scientific method on its head with a study that says we can permanently dispense with realistic tests of the very old nuclear weapons that ultimately guarantee our national security. This is policy masquerading as science. The authors believe in complete nuclear disarmament and see an irreversible end to the nuclear testing as a way to hasten that goal. You don't need to be a highfalutin scientist, though, to understand that we must have a nuclear deterrent for the foreseeable future, that realistic tests are necessary to ensure its viability, and that we should not become party to a treaty that would preclude the sort of rigorous testing relied upon by good science and competent scientists. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedomradio.com.
In Washington, Hugh Hewitt has the diagnosis.
They don't understand the need for speed.
Oh, we'll get to it. Don't worry. We'll get it done. Open amendment process, blah, 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 blah.
Not in the least bit clued in to the sense of urgency, but I don't think the Beltway is.
I'm just beginning to think it is a Beltway disease.
Kind of an invisible wall separates them from what the people think.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone. At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined as we have the privilege of being each week by Bill Gertz, the guy who takes us inside the ring. That's the title, of course, of his column at the Washington Times. He is also a senior editor now at the Washington Free Beacon, the author of numerous extraordinarily important books on the subject we dress with him each week, which is summarized nicely by The Failure Factory, the title of one of those books, what the U.S. government is sometimes doing to itself and to our security that is contributing to the dangers we're facing around the world. Bill, welcome back. Always good to have you.
Hi, good to be on the show.
We haven't spoken since the North Korean missile launch fizzled. Tell us what happened, as best you can tell, and
more generally, what's going on in North Korea in terms of the threat that it poses through these kinds of developments, missiles and other arms that they're exporting to others?
Well, this is a major development in the sense that, you know, this missile test that was a failure. The first stage failed and the second two stages went into the sea. But it was really poking the finger in the eye of the U.S., which just weeks earlier had agreed to provide food aid to this rogue regime there. And they were sending the signal that they're going to develop their nuclear weapons and delivery systems irrespective of anything that the United States wants to do, whether it's food aid or six-party nuclear talk. They are making progress. I think the big takeaway from this is that we can expect to see some type of an underground nuclear test in the not-so-distant future.
Mm. At the very moment that the administration is ramping up to try to get us to agree permanently not to test nuclear weapons ever again, North Koreans are going to go do it again, which, of course, we'll be told is, has no bearing on whether we test or not. Bill, one of the other stories that you've been concentrating on is another facet of this North Korean missile program, namely a missile launcher that seems to be designed for carrying around in a mobile way an intercontinental range ballistic missile. What are you finding about that that launcher and its provenance?
It's a big deal. I mean, the inside view within the administration is that this is a major problem because it is clearly a Chinese-made, Chinese-designed mobile missile launcher that is sporting a long-range, a brand-new long-range North Korean missile. And this shows this is a clear violation of U.N. sanctions that were imposed a number of years ago, I think going back to 2006, and it shows that the Chinese are playing a double game, that they're publicly saying that they're cooperating with the U.S. and other states in the region to try and pressure North Korea to give up its missile and nuclear programs, but on the backside of it, they're providing strategic missile technology to this rogue regime. It's simply outrageous, and you know, there were question came up at the State Department this week that said, you know, what's the U.S. think of this? And the State Department spokesman said, well, we take the Chinese at their word that they're not helping the North Koreans. It's just unacceptable. You know, Congress has to step up and say this is a violation of sanctions, and sanctions need to be imposed on China for this.
Yeah. Now, Bill Gertz, in your Inside the Ring column this week, you also pointed out something else that makes this even more outrageous, and that is that it appears that there is an engine inside this mobile launcher from where?
From the United States.
Yeah.
Again, we're going by, since nobody can get access to this actual mission and missile launcher and measure the various things like the tailpipes and the openings, you're going by photos. And this Chinese manufacturer that made this launcher also makes what they have been selling as a heavy-duty off-road vehicle, which they claim has a Cummins diesel engine and a German automatic transmission. So here you have not just a Chinese proliferation, but possibly some illicit dual-use technology being diverted from the United States.
Yeah.
Like I say, this warrants a major investigation.
Well, and to add further to the urgency for that kind of oversight, Bill Gertz, there is this report that you've also, I think, broken the story about from the Departments of State and Defense, supplied by the Obama administration in the interest, it appears, of trying to get Congress to go along with greater latitude for space technologies to be transferred to the Chinese. What did that report find, and how does it bear on this question of sort of dual-use misappropriation by the Chinese of this sort of technology in ways that could very much hurt us?
Yeah, it's an amazing story. We wrote it up extensively in the Free Beacon, and the real issue is that the Congress was demanding that the administration provide an assessment of what it will mean if the U.S. lifts restrictions on the export of satellites. And this was done as part of the Obama administration's feckless issue of effort to reform all export controls, seemingly without regard for the national security implications. So this report was done by both the State Department and the Pentagon, said that they want to make it easier for satellite makers to export satellites. These controls were imposed back in the 90s when two U.S. companies, Loral and Hughes, illicitly provided China, as part of satellite exports, with technology that improved their long-range missiles. And a special section, an appendix of this report, really undermines the administration's case. It states very clearly that if these satellite export controls are loosened, it very likely will improve China's space warfighting capabilities. And this is a real danger. I mean, people in the national security community should absolutely oppose any effort to loosen controls on exports, because it says very clearly the Chinese will use this to gain access to technology that will improve their lasers, anti-satellite weaponry, and other space warfare capabilities.
Yeah, and as we talk about frequently with you, Bill Gertz, control of space has profound implications, not just for the obvious national security interests of this country, but also, of course, for our commercial interests. And to the extent that the Chinese are putting themselves in a position to exercise control of space with perhaps technologies that they've already gotten from us, legally or at least in an above-board way, or illegally, covertly. You've been doing as much to document over the years, Bill, as anybody. It does raise a question, and I'm struck. The quotes that you cited out of this report are astonishing, that the Obama administration's own Defense Department, its own State Department, would offer this candid assessment that really basically says this is a crazy idea, an irresponsible and reckless idea to be transferring these kinds of technologies to the Chinese. Bill, let me quickly, before we run out of time with you, turn to another topic that you've also been exploring, of course, for a long time, and that is the implications for our missile defenses of two things. One, the deployment ashore of Aegis missile defense systems in Europe, and the Russians' determined effort to try to prevent that, and perhaps efforts, continuing efforts by the Obama administration to accommodate the Russians. What's going on?
Yeah, it's a big story because it bears extremely importantly on our national security, and that is missile defenses. We've invested billions of dollars. We have a very fundamental system right now. It needs to be expanded. The Russians are trying to block it along with the Chinese. In testimony this week, Lieutenant General Patrick Riley, the director of the Missile Defense Agency, testified before the Senate Defense Appropriations Subcommittee that the administration, the Pentagon, is moving ahead with a very unique and important system called Aegis Ashore. They're taking the advanced SM-3 missile interceptor that's deployed on our Aegis warships, and they're going ahead and putting those in the ground in two countries in Central Europe, Romania and Poland. They've identified the sites, they've made the agreements, and within the next few years, in fact, the next 3 years, we'll see the first interceptors deployed in Romania, followed by them a second batch in Poland. And this is a very significant development because these are capable interceptors, not as good as the ones that they originally planned. However, the Russians are fighting that, and we have this alarming statement by the president that he's going to be more flexible after the election. He told the Russians that.
Right.
We
will be watching this closely, especially as a result of Ellen Tauscher, his undersecretary of state for this arms control portfolio, trying to do some deals, it appears, with the Obama, with the Russians on exactly this score. Bill Gertz, this is what you cover so brilliantly. It's what we look forward to visiting with you each week about, and we look forward to doing so again next week, as we look forward to talking with the rest of you next week, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.